Welcome to the Misfit Stars podcast. Woo! I'm Shannon Curtis.
And I'm Jamie Hill. Welcome to episode 3. Hey, we want to welcome our new listeners.
Welcome, new listeners.
We have had a trickle of people, a steady, almost, it's not a flood.
A stream?
Yeah, like a stream of people.
A creek?
Yeah, new subscribers, like almost one a day.
Oh, that's so exciting.
I know, it's really exciting.
I love it, so thank you.
If you play this out, it could mean that by the end of the year, we'll have, no, not this year, but next year, 365 more scribers. Maybe?
Scribers?
Subscribers.
Perfect.
Yeah, totally. It's like apostrophe scribers. It's the new cool way to say podcast subscribers.
That's right.
Like when you hear this on Pod Save America, ooh, like a month from now, where did John Lovett get it from? From me.
Podscribers.
Podscribers.
That's the word, the podscribers.
That sounds a little bit odd. I like it. I mean, it kind of makes me think of pod people, which makes me think of horror movies.
No, no. Oh, gosh.
I'm not anti.
Well, welcome to our new
listeners.
Subscribers. Listeners. This is a public episode this week, though. So not only our subscribers are able to listen to this entire episode.
Everyone
right?
in the world can listen to it, and we hope you do.
Who do they have to thank for this episode?
The Misfit Stars.
The subscribers.
Yeah, totally.
This episode brought to you by
the scribers.
Our Misfit Stars. Thank you, stars, and thank you all who are listening.
Absolutely.
If someone's listening and they're not a subscriber, they could become one, right?
Oh, totally. And they would be helping make this happen.
Well, that would be really cool of them if they did that.
And also they would get free stuff.
That would be awesome. Hey, where do they do that?
At misfitstars.com. Super simple.
It is.
Yeah.
Super sensitive. There's a big pink button, right?
Yeah, it's the second big pink button, and it says something along the lines of join or subscribe to listen to all episodes,
You'd think we'd know since we made the website.
You'd be wrong.
Oh, well.
Yeah, you know.
Hey, so later on in this episode, we're going to dive into a listener topic regarding where to find inspiration for creativity.
And hey, that's cool.
It's going to be cool. Listener topics come directly from our Misfit Stars community, those people who have become members of Misfit Stars, those subscribing members.
Yeah, the scribers.
The scribers.
Which also could mean someone who's writing something, so that's confusing.
Oh, yeah, that's bad.
A quill with like a feather on it, dutifully scribing our podcast.
With a British accent.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
That goes without saying, sure. I think. If you're writing with a feather quill pen, like you've got to have a British accent. You can't without.
Totally not.
Yeah, that's another great reason to become a sustaining member.
Oh, gosh.
No, to become a Misfit Stars member, right? You are helping make this happen when
Thank
you do that.
Thank you.
Thanks for doing that. You know, we got into some cool stuff this last week, right?
Yeah, we've been doing some stuff. Today we trimmed a tree outside.
We don't mean like Christmas trimming.
No. This is like a newfound love I've discovered. So now that we own a house, that means we have to do yard work.
Yeah, right? Because we have a yard all of a sudden.
Yeah, and we did the bulk of our like pre-winter yard work a couple weeks ago, but today was sunny and we needed to go make some vitamin D outside. Mm-hmm. And so Jamie's like, hey, let's go finish that one last tree. There was one last tree that we didn't like really deal with.
And it would have been fine, except we've started having to duck when we walk by it because it sort of hangs over our little walkway to the garage. And, you know, ducking around a tree is not the worst thing in the world, but like, what if we didn't have to do that?
Right. But it's one of these trees that's like a shrub. And so it's actually like, you're supposed to like sculpt it. And I have discovered I really love sculpting shrubs.
Oh, totally.
It's so fun. I'm going to wake up tomorrow really sore in my shoulders and neck area, but like, it's like cutting hair. It's so fun.
It's like cutting hair with yard long shears.
Yes. So that was fun. We did that today.
Yeah, totally. But it's funny because like this time of year, people are like, yeah, no, I was trimming the tree.
No.
We just mean we're taking shears to a tree.
Actually trimming.
Yeah. There is no tree inside our house. There is no seasonal tree.
The other thing that we've been doing this week is we started our giveaway days this week.
Yes. Oh my gosh. So if you're listening to this and you don't know what this is, we give away a ton of merchandise at the end of the year, every year.
Yes, while also raising money for some cause that needs money.
Yeah.
And so by the time this episode comes out, our first giveaway day will be all over.
It's happening right now while we're recording it.
You missed it. But there'll be more, so that's good news. This year, the cause that we've identified to support is the Wildfire Relief Fund, mm-hmm. helping support people who are in recovery efforts for those who've lost their homes and their belongings and are displaced from the recent California wildfires.
Totally.
So
our former home state of California. Love you guys.
I know. So we're going to send a little bit of love. So the first giveaway day seems kind of backwards because we gave away a bunch of t-shirts, mm-hmm. and for every t-shirt
free t-shirts.
For every t-shirt we gave away, we also you and me, Jamie, mm-hmm. and I, we also gave $5 to that wildfire. They're so close.
They are.
They're so close. And I'm sure that there were lots of wildlife.
Do you know who is at the center of the Venn diagram between wildfire and wildlife?
Wild?
No, Smokey Bear.
Smokey Bear. Oh, yeah.
Right? He's the he is the wildfire wildlife guy.
He is totally. Oh, Smokey. So we gave $5 mm-hmm. Of our own money.
For every t-shirt that we gave away.
Yeah, for every t-shirt we gave away, which sounds backwards, but really we're just kind of like trying to lead the way because in giveaway days numbers 2 and 3.
Easy for you to say.
Which are coming up. And it's terrible. For the ones that are coming up, we're going to give people like you mm-hmm. out there the
listening public, right now.
Yeah. An opportunity to join us in that giving effort. So we'll still be giving stuff away, but inviting you to also contribute,
to pitch in
to the wildfire relief fund.
Totally. Which also yeah. would sort of be a wildlife relief fund because, if we have fewer wildfires, maybe fewer little wildlife animals will get burned.
Oh, gosh.
That's very sad.
It's very sad. So what else have we been up to?
What else? We've gotten pretty close to finalizing all the giveaway stuff for the Misfit Stars community.
Oh, our merch stuff for Misfit Stars.
Yeah, which is so
yes.
exciting. We spent the weekend, like a shocking portion of the weekend, designing the sticker sheet. We got really into it, though.
It's so fun.
Oh, my gosh.
So those of you who are members of Misfit Stars and you are contributing, what is the level?
Ten
or above. You'll be getting one of these sticker sheets.
It's just going to come.
It's going to be really fun. And also, we're going to get the proof of our second round proof of the Misfit Stars t-shirt also, which yeah. is so cute.
We have posted a few pictures on the internet that y'all might have seen over the last week of the first iteration of the shirt, which looked really adorable. The finished version is going to look basically like that. We just noticed a couple things when we got
small things.
Yeah, they were like, oh, we could tweak that and yeah. do it a little bit better.
Super fun though.
Oh my gosh, so cool though.
Yeah.
It's a great shirt.
It's a really great shirt. Something else we did, was it this past weekend or... Recently, we did an interview, you and I, like a joint interview for an online music conference.
Which is a nifty idea.
Yeah, that was fun.
A virtual music conference, right? So it's like people being interviewed from all around the world and people participating and tuning in from all around the world. It wasn't live in real time. It was recorded and then sort of put up in an organized way by the person who organized it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Super cool.
Yeah.
But it was that experience that sort of like led us to the idea for the first half of today's podcast, right? Like it sort of revolves around the idea of how we, the general we, define success, not just you and me, but like how do people define success? And that's something that like comes up a lot in the industry that you and I work in and the field that you and I work in.
It's a success-driven industry.
It really is. And like, especially like for a lot of people, like they watch like NBC's The Voice or something. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, there's somebody that's achieving success in the music industry.
Clearly they're
singing on television.
Yeah.
And for a lot of people in our culture, that is a signifier of success. Mm-hmm. And we can talk about maybe a little bit later why to me that's not necessarily a signifier of success, mm-hmm. but there are all these like outward signifiers that like our culture accepts as success. And so we're going to break apart some of those things and talk about what success actually, a new definition, what it might actually mean.
Yeah, totally. So when we were doing this interview, you know, a week and a half ago or whatever it was, the question that we got asked is, how do you define success for yourselves as artists, right? And that's a really important question, I think, because I think that... It's hard sometimes when you're an artist because so much of the time you're sort of working in a void. And you don't just have to be an artist for that to be true. Anyone who is pursuing a creative endeavor of any sort, be it professionally like we are, or just in their life because it brings them satisfaction, right? It can really feel, especially if you're making something that's near and dear to your heart, like you're not getting like enough validation for that, right? Like you're just screaming into a void. Mm-hmm. Putting the most vulnerable and important parts of yourself out and then getting nothing back in return, right? Mm-hmm. Which can, I think, for a lot of people, and I know like certainly for me in a previous point in my life, just be frustrating and depressing, and it can lead to a bunch of like unhealthy behaviors.
Sure, but I think that also some of those, like the dissatisfaction that you are describing, Like, I wonder, and we're going to get into this, I think, like, I wonder if the reason for some of that dissatisfaction is because the question maybe hadn't been addressed first. Like, what does it actually mean to be successful? Like, am I adopting other people's definitions of success?
Yeah.
Without even thinking about it, without even like taking time to pick that apart. And I think that probably applies more broadly, just beyond like a creative music life also, right? Like, do we just, you know, sort of snooze through the idea that we get to define what success means for us and just accept what society's definitions are?
Yeah.
And then does that actually breed some of this dissatisfaction?
Oh,
right?
Absolutely.
If we've not defined it for ourselves.
You know, for musicians, what are some of the signifiers? What are some of the ways that people like classically could say a music artist has achieved success when blank happens?
When they're on TV. That's one of them.
Yeah, on TV, particularly on a competition show, right? Like,
totally,
that's a classic.
Totally. I think that this is like a point to illustrate this was, you know, my mom,
yeah,
for instance, has been, you know, in varying degrees supportive of what I do over time. Although I'm not sure she's really...
It's hard for a parent, right? Because you were pre-med.
I was a
pre-med
student.
And now you're doing music.
Yeah, exactly. That's a far yeah, cry from what I was intending to do or what I thought I was going to do. But like, I think that she has struggled to understand maybe sometimes what I do.
Sure.
And that's okay. I mean, I don't need to be like fully understood in that way.
It's abstract.
But I do remember, do you remember this?
Oh yeah.
The very first time I was on TV.
Like local TV in
her local market.
Yeah. Like morning TV.
Morning news program performing on TV. Like, there seemed to be something that clicked for her when that happened. That she's like, oh, I get it.
Oh, yeah. And she bought way more in that way, right?
It's
like,
true.
She TiVo'd it, remember? And yes, she wanted to show us so we could see how it looked on TV with, like, the ads around
Which
it and stuff.
Which was fun.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really fun. But definitely, like, being on TV is one thing that people... What are some other signifiers?
Being on the charts in some way,
for
right?
Sure.
Having a video that achieves some level of virality, perhaps, or just something that feels like it's a cultural moment, you know? And for sure, like, those things can be very validating. Like, we've been around long enough that over the course of the couple decades that you and I have each been doing this, we've experienced one or two of those things, right?
Sure.
You had a very viral video moment. We had a very viral video moment a few years ago with I Know, I Know, right? That really took us by surprise. And it did honestly feel very validating.
It did, yeah.
You know, and it's funny, like, noting, like, how that felt, and then also noting, like, in the subsequent years, the pressure that I have felt, like, what if the stuff that we do doesn't achieve that, right?
Totally.
Like, and I'm good at, like, understanding that that was an anomaly, right? That wasn't a resetting of the bar. That was something that went dramatically above and beyond any reasonable bar.
Right.
You know, we felt fortunate. It drew some people into our community, which was wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
It started a long conversation in our community around mental wellness, and that was really rewarding. But, like, that should only in a healthy way be viewed as an outlier.
Right, right.
Like, we're not going to be swinging for those fences every time. That's like that's like hitting a baseball 1,000 feet.
Well, and I think that it also just like outlines like it really highlights what are you swinging for, right?
Yeah.
Like are you swinging for this outward signifier of success or are we swinging for producing things that are going to mean something to us and mean something hopefully to others and just be something of value, right? Because I think that if what you're swinging for is matching the success of the last thing or surpassing the success of the last thing, like your focus is just on the wrong place. Like you're focused on center field, not on the ball.
Yeah, totally.
Right? Like, and I think that that really probably... I don't know. It probably makes an impact on how successful that swing actually is. And it probably also makes a big impact on like your happiness level while you're doing it.
Oh, absolutely. Right. Because if you're just constantly feeling the pressure of measuring up,
right,
that's not healthy or good.
Right.
And you know, something funny, like, you know, you and I come from our perspective as people who operate super independently, like very below the larger cultural radar,
yeah,
you know, which, you know, super good place to be, happy to be here. I think, thinking about it, that probably, like, we put these pressures unconsciously on like bigger artists who are out there in the world,
oh,
right?
Totally.
Like how often has it happened that an artist has had like one song that became like a defining cultural thing for them and never had something after that that was as big? And so you kind of think, ah, they peaked, they're not as good, but they're still doing wonderful, vital work.
Sure.
You know? And if you can think about this from people like Not a Surf, who had that very outlying song, Popular. Remember that song? I'm the head of the class, I'm popular. It was kind of a novelty song almost.
Right.
Their career after that was amazing. So much emotional depth, so good.
Right.
But so many people were like, ah, they're A, they're the popular band, and B, they peaked with Popular.
That's so...
When it's not
like,
true.
Ironic, actually, you know? That was the theme of the song that was... their high water mark.
Oh, totally. And then if you think about someone who's as widely known as like Prince, right? He had his biggest hits in like the, you know, 80s through early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
But he was doing wonderful work, vital work,
totally.
Right up until he died a couple of years ago.
Totally. Well, and I think that part of it
and
is
how,
that...
To add on to that, how much do we miss out on from people like that by just superficially going, ah, they're past their prime, ah, their hits are out of them. I'm just going to listen to the stuff I knew when they were on the radio.
Yeah, totally. Well, and also that point of view really sort of like doesn't take into account the personhood of that person either, right? Like you're just only looking at those people as like celebrity or as, you know, some cardboard cutout version of an actual human being, which is what they actually are, as an actual human being, you know? Like, and I think that maybe getting back to like how we define success for ourselves too, you know, like, we have to consider the wholeness of who we are when we decide what success means to us.
Total
right?
side note here, but speaking of cardboard cutouts of celebrities, at a certain point in my life, I was half owner of a cardboard cutout, a life-size cardboard cutout of Rod Stewart.
Oh, gosh.
From the Do You Think I'm Sexy era, like that sort of late 70s kind of disco-y era. He was wearing the tightest possible leather pants you could wear, and he was standing with his back toward the camera, looking over his shoulder saucily.
Come on.
Oh, it's the best.
Part owner of
yeah,
a cardboard
my friend
cutout,
Rob
right?
and I, my friend Rob and I found it together at the same time, and we both loved it so much. It wasn't like, ah, you can have it.
So
you
where
can have
is it now?
Rob has it.
Well, what about our half?
Do you really want this in your house?
No, I
Careful
don't.
Careful what
actually,
you wish for.
I don't. Rob, you can keep it.
I want it right in the corner
that
of our living room
funny.
Now that you mention it.
That is too funny.
Just hanging out doing the pod, you, me, and Rod Stewart.
Gosh. Think of for the photos, maybe.
Yeah. Why is Rod Stewart there?
So one of the things that happened in conjunction with this interview that we did and then those sort of like spawned this conversation about what does success mean was that in the bio that I was put out for the music conference.
Like online.
The organizers of the conference did this thing that happens a lot. I'm sure you see it when you read magazines like about movies or music where they listed our names and then after your name, because it was like producer and engineer Jamie Hill, and then
parentheses,
and then the names of recognizable figures with whom Jamie has worked in the past.
Yeah,
right?
Like three of them, like A, B, and C.
Yeah, and it's just it's funny to be having a conversation about how you define success, and then to literally have in parentheses next to your own name. Here's why I'm successful. It's because I've worked with these successful people.
That's right. Here's the names of three people more successful than me.
Or more
which
famous.
Which therefore makes me successful.
And that is just a really weird, like, trope that we have accepted as a society.
Yeah,
isn't
I think
it
so.
Strange? Like, I'm important because I have rubbed shoulders with this important person and that important person. And that is weird.
Yeah.
That is a bizarre thing.
Totally.
But that was one of the things that sort of like... I don't know. You and I have had experiences with this in our careers, this like success by association.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think in each of those circumstances, like that myth was debunked for us.
Oh gosh. Yeah. I've got an example of it. I know you do too. What's yours?
No, you go first.
Okay. Yeah. So as a producer who like, so here's let's step back, right? So how do I measure success? Is it by the names that I can put next to my name? Not so much. For me, the way I measure success with my work is, do I make a record that is emotionally connective? Do I make something that can take someone from point A to point B, like leave them different than it found them. Mm-hmm. Ideally, do I make a record that moves me emotionally? Can I go back 5 years down the road and listen to it and have an emotional experience? Like right. if I do that, then like I have completely achieved success.
Ding, ding, ding.
That's it. That's the only level of success that I care about. Do I make something that's emotionally engaging and that people can interact with on that level?
Yes.
You know? But sometimes in my career as an independent producer, I will have in my orbit somebody who has worked with me on one project, but then thinks that they to get to a bigger, more famous-y sort of place in their career potentially need not to work with me anymore.
The way that people say it in the music industry is to get to the next level.
Yeah, it's so true. Oh my gosh. Yeah, to take it to the next level.
What is the next level?
What is the next level, really?
Get it. But anyway, yes. Yeah. Yeah, so
right?
There was and this so, experience you had.
Oh yeah, an experience I had. So a band that I loved working with, and I had made like an EP with them a number of years ago.
And it sounded so good.
Oh, it was wonderful. You know, it succeeded for me in all the ways that I hope the stuff that I work on will succeed. You know, it was just compelling. It was really cool. And so then this band, you know, they had had that same experience too. They really liked it. And so they hired me to make another EP with them. And so we had a slightly bigger budget. So we rented a really good studio, like one of the best ones in the area. And we got amazing recordings. And I took them home to mix them. Everyone was so happy with the process. In parallel to this all happening, though, they had also started to attract the attention of this sort of predatory artist manager type. Yeah, she had parentheses. She came with parentheses. She knew somebody who had in some capacity worked with Nine Inch Nails, who was an engineer, right? And that wasn't me. That was somebody else.
The power of the parentheses.
Oh my gosh, the power of the parentheses was strong, right? And this was all sort of happening in real time as I was making this record with this band. And so between like when we tracked it and when I like delivered the first mix, which was only like a week and a half later, but it was all happening in real time. Like, I delivered the first mix of the sort of main song, and I knocked out of the park. I had gotten good recordings. The mix came out killer. It's funny. I went back, like, years after this all happened, what I'm about to tell you about, and listened to it. Like, was it bad? Was it really bad? It was wonderful.
Nope,
the mix
still
I turned
good.
Was really good. But, like, I turned it into them. I was like, cool. And they took an unnaturally long time to reply. And when they replied, it was like, oh, we're just not quite sure if we like it. It just doesn't seem like there's some things that are quite working. And they point out some really fiddly weird things, like the kick drum isn't loud enough. Like, what? That's weird, but okay, fine. And like, we went down these weird rabbit holes, and eventually it came out that what they wanted to do...
Ulterior motive.
Yeah, the ulterior motive was they wanted to find some fault with it, so they had some predicate, some premise...
Plausible deniability.
Yeah, for giving it to someone else to mix. Who would that someone else be? The guy with the Nine Inch Nails in his parenthesis.
The guy with the parenthesis.
Yeah, totally. And it should be noted, I looked this person up, like, he was like a second engineer. Like,
yeah.
He was in the room at the time that someone else was working on Nine Inch Nails, yeah. I think is how this actually went down.
But that's how parentheses often work.
Like, totally.
Oh, I was in the room, so I can put it in my parentheses.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. I bumped into Taylor Swift one time by mistake coming out of an elevator. Put Taylor Swift parentheses.
Worked with Taylor Swift. Totally. That's so funny. Yeah. But you know, I can identify with how the band approached that situation because
yeah.
I've also been there.
Yeah.
Like when I was first starting out in my solo career, you and I made a couple of EPs together.
Yep.
And then I was approached by a guy who is a producer, engineer. Yeah, not an engineer, producer
yeah.
musician.
With an amazing career.
With an amazing career. Somebody whose music I had followed when I was a teenager.
Yeah. So exciting because you knew this person.
I knew this person and he sent me a message on MySpace. Remember MySpace? saying that he had listened to my song Boomerangs and Seesaws and thought it was really great and he'd be interested in working with me. And so...
You were over the moon.
I was over the moon.
This was so validating.
It was so validating.
Yeah, because this guy was not only a musician who you knew in his own right, but he had then subsequently produced records that helped define your childhood.
Oh, totally. Totally.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So it meant something. And he was a name also,
yep.
right? Like
yep.
people know who he is.
Sure.
And so it took a couple of years to actually make it all happen, but I ended up going, flying out to Nashville where he lives to make an EP with him.
Yeah.
And first of all, let me just say that that experience was so much fun for me.
Yeah.
Like just on the merits, I stayed with him and his wife for a week.
And they were
lovely,
right? His wife
was so lovely.
Yeah.
They made me dinner. Like honestly, my experience living with them for a week and making this EP has really helped me to inform the kind of experience I hope that you and I give artists when they come to make records here with you.
Yeah, totally.
Like that's this like, come, welcome, you're part of our family, we're going to break bread together and make some art. Like
yeah,
that's
totally.
Really.
And it's a warm embrace and it's all very like interactive.
Yes.
The way you described it to me just made it sound like every part of it was fun.
It was so fun. Yeah. It was a good experience. And I think that the recordings that we got were really great and they were unique to that experience. And they came out differently than records that you and I would have made together because it was just a different set
producer.
Of people.
Yeah, totally.
A different producer.
And some of these session musicians who we brought in to play on your record had played on records that you had when you were a kid.
So the session musicians all had parentheses.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. I was so excited about it. So the experience was really fun. But I think, I know for sure that going into that experience, I thought I was going to be adding to my parentheses.
That's right.
Right? And
that's
I thought that also working with somebody with a big name that had rubbed shoulders with and had, you know, the cred.
He was connected.
That would rub off on me, that it would, you know, maybe help me get to the next level.
Well, and also realistically, like we were talking about it with each other, I remember at the time, like, hey, this guy's a big name. He's working on records that in the last like 6 months have done really, really well.
Totally.
For sure, you making something with him, all the industry people are going to be like, hey, what's this guy working on now? Who's this?
Who's this?
Maybe we're going to sign her. Maybe we're going to take her to the next level.
Right, exactly. The elusive next level.
Yeah.
So come to find out through, or not find out, but really just a protracted learning experience through that whole time was that it turns out that he is just a guy who makes recordings with people.
Yeah, and he's a producer. He produces records.
He gets hired to produce records. And that's, you know, he did seek me out. It was, you know, he did give me that genuine, you know, feedback on the song Boomerangs and Seesaws. And actually we re-recorded, we did a re-record of Boomerangs and Seesaws for this EP just because he wanted to take a crack at it.
And it was like more of a guitar, like almost like a modern rock alternative kind of version.
Yeah, it was fun.
Via Nashville, it was great.
It was a fun version of that song. But
he's a masterful producer.
Oh, totally.
Like and the people who played on the record, the tones were great. We had it mixed by somebody who I would do it now, but at the time I wasn't like so sure of myself as a mix engineer. We had it done by a guy who like mixes like big records.
Parentheses.
He has parentheses.
He's got parentheses.
Yeah, but you know, when you're a mix engineer, you just have those skills, right? Those parentheses actually mean something.
No, it's true. They do.
Although sometimes they don't.
Right. They don't necessarily. But the point is that through what I learned through all of that is that really, I hired this guy to produce my EP, and I had a lovely time doing it, and we ended up with a really nifty-sounding EP, but that's it. The rubbing shoulders wasn't... that was something I was reading into the situation because of all of the ways in which I've absorbed how we as a culture, how we as a society value success how one achieves it, right? That was a big learning experience
and
for me.
The implied transferability of it, right?
Oh, right.
Like
totally.
So many things in our society are just predicated to getting in the same room as someone. Like if you can just get in the same room as them,
totally.
Like things are going to change for you. You hear that in our industry, but you hear it all over the place, you know?
Right. Oh, absolutely. I'm sure that's widely applicable to industries, businesses, fields that people work
in. And you know,
in.
Like we should note too, that like this wasn't just like an abstract learning experience. Like we learned this experience with money. We were so convinced, that this was going to be a next level thing. All these parentheses, we're going to take your career to the next level, right? That we invested like $3,000 in a PR campaign at a time when we did not really have $3,000 to invest.
True.
And we were like, this is going to be huge, right? All the parentheticals we can put after Shannon Curtis now, and this guy who mixed the record, and this guy who produced the record, and the people who played on the record, there were parenthetical names for days. And we were certain that we were just going to start getting press for you around this. And people were going to start reaching out, like, who is this new fresh face?
Right, right.
With all these parentheses behind her name.
It's funny that you mentioned the PR campaign too, because isn't that another layer of like accepting outward signifiers of success that aren't necessarily valid? Like,
oh, totally.
Oh, to be successful, we need for my name to be in music publications.
That's right.
No, I know that now, but I did not know that then.
Yeah, seriously.
You know,
we have not had any kind of traditional music press in the entire time where I would say that we've actually started experiencing success.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like there was a whole time in our lives when we like every single month didn't know how we were going to pay rent.
I know.
I mean, for years.
I remember.
And like, that's no longer a feature in our lives, knock on wood, right?
Right.
But like for years now, like we're not rich, but we're okay. Like we went from not okay to okay.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, wow, what a big deal. What a relief.
Right.
But like, I think it speaks to the idea that we've just managed to engage a growing community around what we're doing with your music.
Right.
You know, and in that entire time, like when that shift happened, we haven't gotten any, like we haven't had a write-up in Pitchfork. That's not what did it. Every single thing that we have done, every single bit of success that we have achieved in that way has just been because we've figured out ever better how to engage a community of people around what we're doing.
Well, and I think that it goes back to the analogy earlier when we were talking about what are you swinging for? You know, like we've been keeping our eye on the ball. We've realized that like the stuff that really matters, the stuff that means something to us and the stuff that actually sustains what we do in a practical way is the stuff that involves us making stuff that matters to us, things that hopefully are of value to others and engaging people around it, right? Mm-hmm. So it's been a total shift of focus. And I guess this is a good time maybe to ask like, so if we don't, if we're not defining success by the parentheses
and the chart positions
and the chart positions
and the record sales
and the being on TV and the societally accepted, I just made up a word, I think.
No, you did good.
Societally
That's
accepted
a real word.
Signifiers of success. How do you, Jamie Hill, define success for yourself?
Well, you know, there's a couple things. I alluded to one of them earlier, which is that, you know, as far as like, you know, producing records, whatever, mixing records, I want to make something that connects emotionally. Mm-hmm. Primarily, I make records for me, right? I want to be super clear about that. Like, I'm the first filter there. Like, if I'm working on something and it's not engaging me emotionally, I keep working.
There's probably a problem there.
Yeah,
if they don't. Yeah,
totally, right? Like, and I've just learned to trust, I guess you would call it your gut. Like, that's that gut level check that I'm doing, that emotional check. Like, is this moving me? Am I having a hairs on the back of the neck moment with the thing I'm working on? And I just keep working until I get to that place with it. You know, I just know from experience now that that's the thing I'm looking for. And until I have that moment, I just keep working. And that's when I feel like I've achieved success, you know, on an individual level.
On a project.
Yeah, on a project or whatever. You know, in a bigger way in my life, just like putting good energy into the world, feeling like I can look myself in the mirror each day, feeling like I can be proud of who I am and what I'm doing, who I'm doing it with and the reasons I'm doing it for. You know, those for me are kind of the big containers, I'd say, the big signifiers. I want to live a connect. I want to live a spiritually connected life in that way, right?
Yes.
Not to sound totally like, you know, hippie-ish about it, but I
go for it. Be as hippie-ish as you want,
right? I did live in San Francisco for like 13 years. Some of it rubbed off. I want to live in a way where I feel like I am connecting to the other people on this planet in the best possible way that I can with the toolkit and the skill set that I have.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great way to describe it.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about you?
So for me, you know, for those of you listening, if any of you saw the show that we did this year, for the Both at the Same Time house concert tour, there was a story that I told right before playing the song Beautiful Life from that album that describes the moment in which I had this epiphany that I was going to do music in my life.
You should just recap it for people who didn't see the show, just briefly. It's so great.
Well, I was sitting on my bed in my senior year of college in San Francisco. I was a biology major. I was pre-med. And I was studying for an organic chemistry exam.
Oh, no.
This big, heavy textbook splayed open on the bed in front of me. And I can remember this moment as if it's happening again to me right now. Like when I close my eyes, I can put myself back in that moment.
Just super vivid.
Super vivid. The sun, my western facing window, there was a beam of sun that just shot through and like sort of like tapped me on my left shoulder. I just remember noticing it on my face, on the side of my face. And I looked up from my book and I just had this overwhelming, it wasn't a voice that I heard, but it was just an overwhelming like impression on my mind, on my heart, that said without saying, "You're going to make music."
That's so trippy.
It was not something that I could deny. It was such a weird, just oddly clear moment.
Like concrete and undeniable.
Concrete and undeniable. Mm. And it scared me to death.
Did you feel like you were going crazy?
I felt like I was maybe going crazy, but I also couldn't just brush it aside.
Yeah.
It was too heavy and too deep to brush aside. It was a terrifying moment, but I knew it was the thing that I was going to do with my life. So I didn't apply to medical school.
Yeah.
I moved home to my hometown after graduation. I started working as a substitute teacher. I started a band with a friend there and launched into how the heck does one go about making music, you know? But all along the way, you know, maybe in early days when I was first starting my band, I might have had like big name and lights type dreams. But over the years, I really have sort of like settled into what feels like more like what actually my dream is or my goals are with mm-hmm. music. And it's really just been that I just want to make music and be able to like survive in my life, like mm-hmm. pay my bills,
yep,
eat food,
yep,
yeah, and make music for people that
pay rent consistently.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I don't care about any of the like the extraneous celebrity related stuff at mm-hmm. all, at all. In fact, it seems like that would probably get in the way of doing what I actually want to be doing.
Oh, totally.
So in some level, success,
like I know people who can't go out in public, their lives are not better for it.
Totally. Totally. So like, I think that on one level, success for me has been defined by just that. Like I want to be able to make music and live my life, pay my bills and go about, you know, living. And I understand that even that is sort of a privileged, you know, thing to have been able to achieve because I was given music lessons as a kid and I, you know, the circumstances of my life really sort of aligned themselves to give me the privilege to pursue things in that way. And mm-hmm. I understand that that is, you know, something that I need to be grateful for. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot more on the lines of the sort of intrinsic success that you were talking about too. Mm-hmm. Like I want to be putting things out into the world. Like I feel successful when I'm making stuff that matters to me mm-hmm. and that hopefully is something that others value as well.
Mm-hmm. Or
can connect to.
Or that is bringing value to others' lives in a way that you can perceive, right?
That's yes.
the idea. Isn't that the idea? The idea that you're giving value?
Yes, yes. Thank you for helping me say what I was trying
to
say.
Well, I mean, that's just what I've perceived with you is that when you feel the happiest about something you put out into the world is when you see how it is working in someone else's life,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Like, you don't do this stuff in a void. You don't just like write songs about like random stuff that doesn't matter.
Right.
You know?
I try not to.
No, you are writing stuff very intentionally to try to communicate your human experience in hope of connecting with someone else on the level of their human experience.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you know, it's interesting. Like, I think it's really important to note that like you can have like internal satisfaction and intrinsic value as being like the ways you measure success and not have that mean that you are without ambition or without goals.
Oh, totally.
Like you have a big ambition and I think it's on the communicational spectrum, right? Like it seems to me like your ambitions vis-a-vis your work over the last few years have tended to be expressed in terms of like internal consistency and messaging and the story arc and the ever improving, hopefully, right? Ever improving narrative arc that you can build around the work you're doing.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I want to continue to challenge myself for sure. But that's part of, I think that's part of what defines success for me is like identifying how to get a little bit better at what I do each time I sit down to do it.
Yeah, you know? Totally.
Like that's part of what makes me feel good and successful in what I'm pursuing.
Yeah.
You know,
another thing I think that you and I share is that like, we're both very goal oriented in terms of like wanting to be very productive and put a lot of things out into the world. You mm-hmm. know, like we put out a full-length album of your material every single year, which is astonishing if you think about it. That's like a Bowie-esque pace. Elton
Sweet.
John, something like that, right? Well, and also like every other year we put out an acoustic record.
You
and
get
like,
to the point in your career where you're like, if it's good enough for David Bowie, it's good enough for me.
Totally. Yeah. 9 records in 6 years. Yeah, cool. Let's do that. Yeah. Yeah.
Totally.
Well, and that to me feels successful. Every time we finish a project and when we do it in a time efficient kind of way, like we really, really work hard on your records. It's not like we're just so gifted that we just kind of wave our hands and there's a record. We work our butts off on these records.
I'm half asleep, but we're making this record. Yeah. No big
oh,
deal.
Oh, what's that? Another record. Oh, cool. Well, thank God. No, like we work really, really hard. We don't sleep as much as we probably should. We stay up until ridiculous
oh,
hours.
Yeah.
But like we do it and like it really means a lot to both of us to really be productive in that way and to provide a tremendous amount of value to the people who are keeping tabs on what we're up to, you know?
Right.
I know that what excites me the most about the artists that I love is when I get something new from them.
Mm-hmm.
Like how hardcore are you waiting for a new national record right now?
Oh, so much.
I know,
always.
Right? You saw on their Instagram a hint that they might be going to the studio, right?
And
you got
like,
so
what?
Excited.
Yeah, I
right?
know.
Like if they were to put out a record every year, I would be thrilled about it.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it would be more stuff from them and I just want it. I want to have that added to my worldview. And I know that similarly for people who, you know, are following what you and I are doing, I can only imagine that they get excited like that too,
I
right?
I hope so.
Right?
I hope so. But I think like the broader point here too is like we produce music frequently because that just like making stuff is what matters to us, mm-hmm. like actually doing the communication through music.
Yeah.
And sticking with that. I think that, you know, going back to this analogy that we sort of like stumbled into earlier in the podcast, like keeping your eye on the ball, like for us, like producing stuff, making music, writing new songs, exploring new ideas and how to communicate them. Like that's keeping our eye on the ball. It's not shooting for the fences. It's mm-hmm. just trying to make contact and like doing what we think that we've been put on the planet to do, you mm-hmm. know?
With integrity.
With integrity, yes. Like I often think in my career, in the work that we do, in terms of this thing that I learned in 12-step recovery about doing the next right thing, mm-hmm. you know, like, yeah. So like in recovery, for those of you listening, if you've had this experience, there's this mantra about doing the next right thing. 'Cause like recovering from whatever addiction it is that you are struggling with can seem like a huge frickin' mountain and that you're never going to be able to do it, right?
So why even start? Which I think is a legitimate barrier for a lot of people.
Absolutely.
Like it seems like such an impossibly big task that you might as well not even try because you're going to fail.
Yeah. Yeah. So this mantra that I learned in 12-step recovery.
And I learned it too. We all learn it.
We all learn it. Is that all I got to do is do the next right thing.
That's it.
I don't have to worry about 2, 3, 7, 12, 18 steps down the path. I just need to figure out what the next right step is and move in that direction mm-hmm. with my whole heart. And like, that is for me, you know, the next song I write is, you know, going to be about the stuff that I've been wrestling with in my mind and in my heart that feels like the urgent of the moment thing to communicate right now. Mm-hmm. You know, the next podcast topic that we discuss
totally.
for that matter is going to be something that we feel is like, oh, this has been really relevant to us right now. Let's talk about this. Mm-hmm. I just think that being able to break it down into that small quantity of just doing the next right thing, it's not about swinging for center field and, you know, aiming for all these outward societal signifiers of success. That is meaningless.
Yeah.
I'm just going to do the next right thing.
It's like driving a car at night, right? You can only see as far as the headlights.
Yeah.
But you can make the whole journey that way.
I love that.
Isn't that lovely?
I did not invent that.
Please. I'm not that deep, everybody. I'm just smart enough to have remembered that deep thing that someone else said.
I love that.
Isn't it poetic though?
I love that. But I think also the really cool thing about that approach to work and life and whatever is that I think that that attitude really helps me to remain in the moment mm-hmm. and to remain focused on the contentedness of my spirit in this moment and actually probably gives me what I need, feeds my soul in that way to actually make the long journey.
Yeah, it's healthier.
And I'm happier in the process.
Yeah, right?
Right?
Because you're not trying to perform to pressure.
Right.
Yeah.
So perhaps like success, to tie a little bow on all of this, for me is like success really feels like being content in this moment, grateful to be in the place where I am, having come from where I've come, and looking for what the next right thing is to do. Like that honestly feels like a successful life.
You know, it sounds like what you're talking about is not measuring success by what you get, mm-hmm. but by what you give.
Yeah, that's nice. Did you hear that somewhere too?
No, I actually thought of that one.
You thought of that one yourself?
I thought of that one myself.
Let's slap that on a coffee mug, baby. No, that's not to belittle it, but you're right. That is it. That is part of the deal.
Yeah. That seems like a good place to sort of tie a little bow on this section. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds good.
Awesome. So, hey, we're going to take a little break. And then after the break, we are going to dive into a listener topic about what has to happen before a creative moment of inspiration happens.
Whoa.
Whoa. That's going to be pretty cool.
Fun.
Yeah.
See you soon.
We missed you
so much.
Yeah.
So we're going to get into a listener topic, huh?
Yeah.
Where do our listener topics come from, by the way?
Our listener topics come from suggestions from people in our Misfit Stars community.
Our stars.
Our stars.
Ding.
So if you're listening to this and you are a dues paid subscriber to the Misfit Stars community, I mean, first of all, thank you so much. That enables us to do this, and that's amazing. And second of all, that's a community. You are one of the people who can submit a topic that you would like to hear us talk about. It's as simple as that.
And we got a bunch this week, so
yeah,
it's
totally
awesome. We're going to start keeping a list, and we're going to tackle one of them today.
Totally. And today's topic is from Jean.
Hi, Jean.
Hi, Jean. And her topic is pretty cool, I think. She asks, what has to happen before a creative moment of inspiration happens?
Interesting question.
Interesting question.
I had a couple of thoughts about this.
What do you got?
Okay. You know how, like you don't just decide one morning that you're going to go run a marathon. Like you can't just like not be a runner. And then like one day then like, I'm going to go run 26.2 miles today.
You know, funny thing, you and I actually did know somebody who did that.
Oh,
remember that?
My story is falling apart now.
No, it's okay because he's a complete outlier. It was this guy who used to work for your college booking agency, and he literally woke up one day with a lot of energy and like, I think I'm going to run a marathon.
Oh, well, then he started running like, he did like 50 marathons in a year.
Totally.
It was
and
insane.
Then he completely blew out a bunch of physical components and it didn't work out in the long term. So anyway, moving on.
Okay, so for most of us,
most of us
can't just wake up in the morning and be like, I'm going to run a marathon today. It's something that you train for.
Yeah.
And like you know, alter your diet so you're giving your body the right foods to build muscles that will help you to run the marathon one day, right? Mm-hmm. I kind of see I think inspiration as being similar to that marathon training. Like, certainly there are times when like just an idea strikes and I don't have control over it and I don't, but honestly, most of the time, the stuff that comes to me as an idea has come as the result of feeding my body the stuff that it needs and training myself to be ready for and listening to those ideas when they come.
Yeah,
right. So it's about like preparing myself to have those moments. I'm not just waiting around idly for those moments to just happen out of nowhere.
I think that some people definitely think that that's how it works, right? Like you sit around and you are receptive and you wait for the muse to speak to you.
Right.
I'm not sure that's how that works.
I mean, maybe it does sometimes, but
every once in a while.
But honestly, like I think being ready for it and knowing how to listen to those sort of things.
Oh, totally.
That involves sort of like training your ear to listen.
Sure.
Right?
And also setting up a set of circumstances in your life where there's going to be more of those moments of that happening.
Totally. So what do? What are some of your like, what are your dietary recommendations for feeding the creativity inspiration?
Oh, you know, something that works really well for me is just to get new little tools. Specifically, there are little, Shannon's going to laugh when I say this. There are these little bits of software.
Wait. Are they called plugins?
They're called plugins. So for people listening who aren't complete like computer music nerds like I am and like Shannon is now, so we work in what's called a digital audio workstation. And, you know, it comes out of the box, ready to record music. But there's all these little external software packages that you can get that you can add in, you can plug into it to enhance the sounds that you have at your disposal. And something I found really inspiring for me is just to keep an eye out on vendors that I respect and, you know, places where people talk about stuff like this in a, you know, in a way that I respect. And just keep my antennae out for things that look interesting, try to get them on sale maybe. And just when it's time to make a new record, have a few new things that I haven't used yet and let those kind of shape the texture of that next project that I work on.
If you were a painter, you'd be like collecting new colors
or new
paints
textures. Or new brushes. Yeah.
Yeah. New things that the ideas come when you have the new tools in hand.
And I was totally going to say for people who don't do computer music, I mean, for anyone who's doing anything creative in your life that you want to find some new inspiration for, get yourself a new tool. It doesn't have to be expensive, right? Like if you are a writer and you're habituated to writing on the laptop, get yourself a really nice like linen paper journal and a cool pencil and a sharpener.
A quill with a British accent.
Maybe you want to write British. Get yourself a quill.
That's what you call a callback joke.
That's a good callback.
You gotta hand it to me, right?
Did you know Shannon has a background in morning radio? That's where you learn the callback.
That's so true. So for me, one of the tools I've learned over the years that's really helpful to sort of get to feed myself a diet that's going to inspire inspiration, if you will, is to read.
Oh, yeah. So true.
Reading books, reading novels. It might have nothing to do at all with what I've been thinking about, what I want to write, but like just getting myself immersed in characters and other people's words that they've written. Watching movies does that for me too, especially like the indie art house movies. Mm-hmm. You know, they're just telling really good stories with really good characters.
Getting immersed in other people's creativity is a good way to stimulate your own creativity.
Absolutely. It's not like I'm like biting ideas off those people, but it's just feeding my body with those ideas, feeding my body with other people's creative work.
And you know, along those lines, like I do that with music too. And you know, it's funny. I listen to a lot of music because I am a huge fan of music. That's why I do music. I listen as a fan first and foremost, but I'm always also, I always have a little part of me that's also listening for like, hey, what are they doing with this sound? How are the drums working here? What did they do with the guitar sound? How did they treat the vocal? Mm-hmm. And I make little mental lists like, oh, I want to try that. Oh, I'm going to steal that. And you were saying like, oh, we don't steal. I do. No, seriously. No, I mean, spent so much time last year trying to dissect exactly how this engineer I respect so much got this one particular drum sound on a record I like. I went down an internet rabbit hole researching it. I realized that we actually had a bit of that computer software I was talking about that is sort of the computer version of the hardware he uses to do it.
That's
and
awesome.
I figured out how the technique works. And did I then change it to be more my own thing that fit with the thing I was doing? Absolutely.
Oh, of course.
But ripping stuff off is great. I mean, I totally recommend...
I'm not going to rip off someone else's lyrics or
words. Oh, no. But as far as like technique or whatever, you should totally rip off techniques, because here's the thing. Like, you could try to rip off someone else's technique, but you won't be able to do
it. It's true. And you're going to learn your own path in the midst of experimenting with that technique. That's going to be
well. That's exactly
to
it.
You.
Even if you're just trying to completely copy someone else's whatever the technique is, be it like a drum sound or a singing style or whatever it is, you're you. You're never going to be exactly that person, you which means this, that like the way you miss is going to be your unique thing.
You know what this makes me think of? You know, I've never been to one of these, but I see people posting on Facebook all the time where they've gone to one of those like wine and paint.
Oh, yeah.
Sessions, you know?
Totally.
And they're always posting pictures of them with their friends that they've gone with to these events. And like the artist who's teaching the class is like, here's what we're all going to paint tonight. Yeah. And it's a picture of a birch tree with a fence post and a barn in the distance or whatever. And like the artist is going to walk everyone through how to paint this thing. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the night, they're all going to have their own version of that same painting.
Which theoretically would be 18 of the same
the
thing.
The same thing, but they never look the same.
They always have the group photo, and it's like they were each trying to do something totally different.
Exactly, which is, I think, illustrative of your point.
That's such a good point.
But, you know, you were saying also that you make mental notes. Mm-hmm. I also think that what's really, another thing that's really helpful, a tool for me as a writer, I get lyric ideas all the time, and so it's really important for me to have something that I can jot those down on like in the moment, because otherwise they will go away.
What
like,
do you use?
I just use the notes function in my iPhone.
Oh yeah, right.
Yeah, so I just take a little note, jot down the idea, and then I can go on about my day and not worry about losing that little idea. And when I get back into my writing room, you know, a couple months later or whatever it is that I'm going to start writing, I can go and look at those notes and sort of like jog those memories of those ideas.
You know, the funny thing is that I do the same thing with like little production ideas.
Oh, you do?
And it's just like little snippets. Like, you know, like I took a note the other day, like I had heard like this really cool effect on a snare drum in some song where like the reverberation at the end of the note, which is kind of like there's a of hitting it and then there's a after.
You're such a nerd.
I know, right? But like the EQ on it changed. Like it started off all like full spectrum, but then just it became only high endy. And I was like, that's interesting. It kind of sounds like it's evaporating. I'm stealing that. And I just took a little note. So I just take little disconnected notes like interesting things that other people have done. Then I just periodically review them and see if they just like on whatever I'm working on spark an idea. It might not even be that idea, but it might make me think in general about what is the snare reverberation doing. And then I'll just be focused on that and take it somewhere else.
Yeah, totally. The other thing I use in my phone is the voice recorder. Like just little voice memos. Like if I've got a melodic idea. The tricky part with that is that I tend to not want to use that in public or even when like just even you're around. Like I kind of don't want to like sing something.
It's so vulnerable. That's very private.
It's so private.
Yeah.
But I do use that when I'm by myself or I try to sneak away and do it.
Yeah,
so
totally.
I can record the thing.
You know, on the topic of like ingesting other people's creative output, something that really has helped me a lot is varying as widely as possible the kind of stuff that I listen to. Mm. It's not like I am just immersed in an indie rock monoculture and I'm only listening to records that are like in a really narrow band. Like, you know what it's like around the house. Like in the last like 4 days, we've listened to everything from like the new Lil Wayne record to Julia Holter, which if anyone's listening to this.
Experimental sort of.
Yeah. Go avant-garde. Listen to the Julia Holter record.
It's really good.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's just weird. It's just weird. It's wonderful. It's exuberant and joyful. But and we listen to heavy metal and we listen to dub from the 70s and we listen to, you know, indie rock for sure. A lot. I try to listen to a lot of female music as well as a lot of male music because it's really important to get a diversity of perspectives. Mm-hmm. If everything you're listening to is made by white men, then you're only going to have a white men perspective on music that you're feeding yourself with, right? And that's not a very, that's like eating Wonder Bread all the time.
Literally.
Like
eating Wonder Bread all the time.
Yeah.
Maybe not actually
tasty, literally. But not necessarily that
it's
healthy.
It's figuratively like eating Wonder Bread all the time.
Yeah.
But diversifying your diet, absolutely. That's very important. I have one last like secret weapon for encouraging inspiration.
What?
Sleeping.
Oh man, that's your specialty.
It's my
specifically napping.
Yes.
Talk about that.
There's
people like, are going to love this.
It's so when I'm writing a song, I can guarantee you 8 out of 10 songs that I've written have involved a nap.
Oh, for sure.
And
I mean, historically, meaning like 80 out of 100.
Yeah. So what that looks like is like, I'll get to a place where I've got like a lyric idea and a melodic idea, and I maybe am making a little bit of headway, but I've reached some sort of a, you know, just not a block, but like I'm just stuck.
Yeah.
What I do is I set my notebook down. I go over to the couch.
Mm-hmm.
I lie down and I go to sleep for like 15 minutes. It's not even very long.
Shannon's the queen of the power nap.
Sometimes it's 10. I mean, like it's literally, not literally, it's figuratively like rebooting your computer.
Yeah.
That feels like what my body's doing.
Just a bit of a reset.
A bit of a reset, but something happens that I can't explain in the midst of that little nap. And my brain tends to, when I have stopped trying to figure out my problem or whatever's gotten me stuck, my brain works on it subconsciously. And 9 times out of 10, I wake up from that nap and I have the solution to how to move forward with the song.
Man, you're so lucky. That's just a really cool thing to be able to call upon.
It's pretty great.
So like I can't nap. You know this about me. I nap twice a year and I nap for 4 hours. It's not a nap. It's just I didn't get nearly enough sleep the couple days before and I'm exhausted and I just need to get more sleep. That's not a nap. That's just more sleep.
Yeah.
So though I do something really similar. Like if I'm working on some music thing, like a mix, or if I'm like typically working on like a production thing or a mix thing, same kind of thing. Like I'm just at a little bit of a stuck moment. Something that just really helps is just walking away for a bit.
Right.
If it's the afternoon, going for a walk, getting fresh air. Like if it's a sunny day, climb up onto something tall, go look at the mountain, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or
mm-hmm.
if it's a nighttime thing, maybe a snack or maybe putting on some other music, something like that. More often than not, I don't listen to other music because it's kind of interferes with my subconscious process,
yeah.
I think. But like a walk is a great thing. Generally speaking, just like if you're stuck on a creative moment or if you're just feeling like you're just having trouble connecting to the next thing that needs to happen, just not doing it and not trying to force it, but walking mm-hmm. away from it is really helpful. Shannon has the most efficient possible version of that. Seriously, being able to put yourself into like deep freeze for like 10 and a half minutes is like an amazing skill. I'm very envious, but you can accomplish the same thing by just putting it down and going and doing something else. Maybe the idea will just be there after dinner or
that's
whatever.
Awesome. I love it.
Yeah, totally. Well, what do you think, Jean? Good answer?
Did we answer your question, Jean?
I think so.
I hope we did.
Yeah.
Hey, if you're listening to this and you have topic suggestions, they don't have to be at all related to creativity or music.
They could just be life.
Like, what's going on in your world that you want to...
Or the world.
Or the world. Or, yeah, I mean, anything.
We're chatty. What do you want to hear us chat about?
That's right. And then also, one thing cool thing that happened last week after last week's podcast, we started a little mini conversation in our Misfit Stars online discussion group.
The Facebook group.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A few different people kind of contributed ideas after having listened to the podcast about the topic that we had discussed in the podcast.
And that's an ideal use of that. I'm really happy that's happening.
Me too. So do that some more, guys. I thought that was really fun.
If you're one of the people who's listening to this who is not yet a Misfit Stars member, please consider becoming one. You can find more info just by going to misfitstars.com and clicking on that second pink button.
Second big pink button.
I enjoy how much we get to talk about big pink buttons on this podcast.
I do too.
Super good.
It's really nice.
So yeah, please do that.
Thank you for listening.
If you're listening on Apple or Spotify or whatever, you can subscribe. Obviously, do that. That's a good thing to do. Then you'll just be alerted when the new episodes come. But new episodes are every Wednesday. I guess you're probably getting habituated to that at this point. Uh-huh. We are too. We're getting used to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like it. I think it's good. I'm going to continue.
There shall be an episode 4
next week.
Yeah. 100%
guaranteed episode 4.
Whew, the pressure's on.
Yeah, it's all good. We can do it. Hey, be alert for the rest of our merchandise giveaway days. Those are still happening. By the time you hear this podcast, number 1 will already be finished, but there's going to be giveaway day number 2 and giveaway day number 3 coming up momentarily. Mm-hmm. We want to give you free stuff, and we want to use that opportunity to help you help us support wildfire relief.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing. You guys, thank you for listening.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it so much.
And we'll see you next week.
Can't wait.
Bye.
Bye.